What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 387 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on Facebook and X for the latest updates. Good to be back with you folks this week. Got a pretty exciting week on the podcast for you folks. Looking forward to getting to all the latest on the local teams. I have stuff from all the teams this week, so really looking forward to getting into all that. Want to say thanks to Ryan McNeil for coming on Guest Friday last week. It was pretty fun to get to talk some TGL golf. Ryan's a pretty big golf person, so it was a really fun episode. Dude's doing something a little bit different, so that was really fun. If you've not listened to that yet, you can go ahead and do that. For this week, we're not doing Guest Friday, but I will be doing a live Twitter Spaces on Twitter during the trade deadline for the NHL on Friday afternoon. Not decided yet whether I'm going to do it up until the deadline or post deadline. Kind of will make that determination, but we'll let you folks know about that. So obviously, if you have a Twitter account, you'll be able to listen. I will record the audio so people can listen to it afterwards. So looking forward to that later this week, as we'll keep track, mostly of what the Bruins activity is going to be. But we'll also, probably likely talk about some of the other deals that go on throughout the day. So I will talk Bruins later in the program. We'll take a look at some guys that could possibly be moved, who's some maybe the Bruins bring in a player or two. Who knows? Kind of hard to know at this point, but I do feel like all options probably on the table for this team at the moment in terms of guys that might move, but we'll talk about that later. I think probably going to start with the Red Sox again today as we get into continuing to see how they're doing in the spring training. They've won some games recently. I know it's spring training, so you don't want to read too much into the wins and losses, but I think there have been good, solid developments for some guys in the last couple of games. And, obviously there are some, I don't want to say the word concern, but I think with Cutter Crawford likely starting the year on the injured list, Brian Baio, I think trying to work his way back to being ready, when opening day kicks off in a couple of weeks. So I think that's really kind of the only area where maybe you're not sure about how things are going to go. I think those two guys dealing with the injury issues, Crawford with his knee, as we've talked about, and Baio with the shoulder soreness that he's dealt with for the last couple of weeks. Spring training, I think trying to ramp up, trying to see if he can be ready, for opening day. I'm not anticipating that he's going to be pitching on opening day. I think that Garrett Crochet likely gets that start, but I think, it will be interesting to see how the Red Sox rotation depth gets tested, right away. I think with the schedule that they have to open the year, not a lot of off days, and I think going into spring training, the thought was I think they were going to likely look at a six-man rotation, which I think they probably still will. But I think now with the injury stuff about Crawford and Baio, are the Red Sox looking at some different guys to start the season in the rotation? Richard Fitz is definitely a guy that I think would be in play for one of those spots if that's the case. Pitched pretty well in the limited number of starts that he had at the end of last season. Red Sox obviously acquired him in the Verdugo trade last year. And I think honestly showed some pretty good promise. And I think legitimately, injuries or not, I think you get to see him, pitch in Boston on a somewhat regular basis. I wouldn't be surprised if, he's kind of bouncing between Worcester and Boston. But I think to start the season, he's got a really good chance to be, one of those starters out of the gate, if Crawford has to miss time or Baio does. But I think so, he's one of those guys. Quinn Priester is another one of those guys as well. pitched in a pre in a let's say preseason spring training game a couple days ago. So I think those two guys in particular, I think would be in line for more work if Crawford and or Bayo has to, miss time to start the season. Lucas Giolito obviously coming back from the arm issue last year, missed the whole season, so he's working his way back too. And so I think kind of a lot of moving parts. The good news is though, Crochet I think has shown some promise and some good stuff in the spring. Walker Buehler had a really good outing the other day. I think those two guys you can feel pretty excited about. And Hauk, obviously with the All-Star nod last year, giving you some hope that those three guys can be the guys that kind of carry your rotation as, Crawford and Bayo and Giolito kind of work their way back to full health. But I do think, like, as we've said a couple times, this rotation depth is a lot better than it used to be. And I think that that's where it's like, as much as maybe we're having like a little bit of concern about where a couple guys are in terms of their injuries, you should feel pretty good that this is a much deeper staff. That, okay, you're thinking about Bayo and Crawford, arguably those are what your third, fourth starters, fourth and fifth starters, like whatever it is, like they're not your front of the rotation guys. It's not like you're going into the season with those two guys as like your number two and number three. Like at best, Bayo is what, the third best pitcher, fourth best pitcher on this team, starting pitching wise. Crawford's maybe the fourth or fifth best. So it's not like, you're in a bad spot if either of these guys need to miss time. I think if anybody misses significant time, it's going to be Crawford. Bayo, I think, is pushing hard to be ready for the start of the season, but I think it's something that you can, and that's why, like, I'm not sitting here saying it's a concern, because it's almost like even if both of those guys do miss time, I do feel like the Red Sox are, I think, set up pretty well. I think mentioning some of the guys that are doing well in the spring, obviously you take the spring training stats with a grain of salt, but I do think that somebody like Trevor Story has started the spring well. He's hitting .429, is 6 for 14 in his first five games, and I think that that's, a positive. Just to kind of get him into the swing of things offensively, so he can hit the ground running. Because I think if he's healthy, he's a guy that can absolutely give some solid help to your offense as a right-handed bat. Rafaela is hitting .385, which is a good sign. Good to get him kind of going. Curious to see what he does differently offensively this year. I feel like definitely was a guy that chased a lot last year, and so I think, the Red Sox look for him to be a little bit more disciplined. So, good start there. Bregman has started well. He's hitting .385, 5 hits and 13 at bats. Duran, .333. And then you got some of the young guys that I think are getting a good amount of playing time. Marcelo Meyer is hitting .294 with a home run and 5 RBIs. And then Roman Anthony hitting .308 with 4 hits and 13 at bats. So, good step there for those guys. Yoshida has gotten into a game, working his way back from his shoulder issue, had 3 RBIs in his first game that he played in a couple days ago. So that was good to see. I think that was the game against the Mets 2 days ago. Rafael Devers, I think, is on his way back. I think he should make his debut, I think, either today or tomorrow. I'm pretty sure that I saw, so that will be good to get him into a game. Red Sox will obviously still figure out about, best way to move forward with, the positioning there. But, this is a team that I think Sure, there are some questions, in terms of how certain guys will fit in, but I think honestly, there's maybe a question of, who's gonna DH. Is it gonna be somebody full time? Are certain guys gonna, do it part time? There's a question there. Second base obviously is a question. Is Christian Campbell a guy that the Red Sox feel is, ready to take over? Does Bregman start the year there? I think there are questions there and obviously questions at DH, but otherwise I don't really think that you have a lot of other questions on this team. Willy Abreu obviously is working his way back, had a gastrointestinal issue. So, I think we'll see how quickly he comes along. If he has to miss time, then I think you seriously consider, Roman Anthony starting the year in Boston. I think that that's a possibility. If Abreu has to miss time, Yoshida and Devers, how quickly do they work themselves back? Devers, I'm pretty confident will, start the season, but how far along is Yoshida? How far along is Abreu in a couple of weeks? That will kind of be interesting to see. But I think the great thing is there's not a whole lot of big questions on this team. You think about the guys that are going to play, Story at short, Casas at first, Duran and Rafaela in the outfield, Devers, Bregman. You're sure that they're going to be in the lineup every day, no matter where they are. So I think it's good that I feel like there's a bunch of spots on this roster that are not, it's not like a question about who's going to be there, who might be healthy. You do have some questions, but I think you have a pretty good idea of what the lineup is going to look like at full health. Obviously, you're hoping that, Yoshida, Abreu, any of those guys that are working their way back from, injuries or whatever situation, that they'll be able to kind of fill in the spots that you expect them to. So I think that's the good thing. Red Sox are scheduled to play the Pirates this afternoon in Bradenton, Florida. And then the rest of the week, matchups with Tampa Bay, Toronto, Miami, Minnesota, and Atlanta. So that's the next six spring training games for them. Red Sox first and only game against the Yankees is March 18th in Tampa Bay. So that'll be something to keep your eye on. But yeah, Red Sox Pirates today, Red Sox and Rays tomorrow, and then they'll play Toronto Thursday, Miami Friday, Minnesota Saturday, and Atlanta on Sunday. So I think for the Red Sox, it's probably going to do it. I think we're going to move on, but obviously keep you updated on more spring training news as it comes in. But early returns are good. Red Sox are starting to string together some wins. I think bullpen has been decent here and there. Chapman got the win on Saturday. Josh Winkowski is getting a good amount of work. But yeah, I think that's going to do it. We're going to move on to talking some Celtics. Came off a good win against the Nuggets on Sunday afternoon. Celtics' next game is tomorrow against the Trailblazers. So kind of a weird week for the Celtics with a couple losses, some guys missing in action, but I think a good bounce back on Sunday afternoon against Denver. Celtics also, I thought, did a pretty good job hanging with the Raptors. Yeah, that game was last week. So, did a pretty good job getting that road win as well. A place that they had gone to earlier in the season and had lost. So it was good for them to get a good for them to get some revenge there. But then, second of the back-to-back against Detroit, they lose in Detroit by 20. game that they just were high turnovers, were out rebounded, really didn't do a lot well in that game. The Pistons are a very, very solid team, a lot better than even how they were a year ago when they tied the NBA record for the longest losing streak in NBA history. But they're a good team this year. Got a winning record, likely will be a playoff team. So, honestly, I think that we'll see how the standings shake out, but I wouldn't be surprised if Detroit's possibly a team that the Celtics could maybe see in the postseason if they're able to pull off a first round upset. And then obviously Friday night last week, Celtics get off to a rocking hot start, but can't keep it up. Cavaliers come back, get the win with some big plays in the fourth quarter by Donovan Mitchell. Celtics, depth kind of got them a bit exposed in that game, as the Cavaliers did a really good job at hunting mismatches. And I think, Celtics kind of were not able to get good enough, secondary scoring from guys other than Tatum and Brown. They both were outstanding offensively in that game, but Derek White, I don't think shot nearly as well as you would have liked. I don't think that the bench really gave the Celtics much, and the Cavaliers, got a lot of good bench contributions in that game. So, kind of exposed the Celtics just a little bit in terms of, is the depth really good enough? Now, obviously, they were without Holiday, without Porzingis, as they've been for the last couple of games. So, kind of hard to judge that game, although, Cleveland's definitely a team that you're going to be battling in the Eastern Conference playoffs. So, definitely, I think, a good matchup to go against them to see kind of what you're going to get in the possible seven-game series against them. I thought that Tatum and Brown did a really good job being involved offensively, but, unfortunately, I think the other parts of the offense, didn't really come through. I think you need more consistency. If, Tatum and Brown are doing their thing, you need to have a little bit more. Cavaliers, I think, clearly had the more depth in that game. But the Celtics, I think, their depth did kind of come back in that win against Denver. Horford was really, really good in that game. You got some really solid, all-around performances. I thought Jaylen Brown was solid in this game. Wasn't perfect, but I think made a lot of the right plays, had 8 assists. And so I think this was a game that clearly you could tell that Jason Tatum was not, his normal offensive self. Obviously still he had 11 rebounds, had 7 assists, but it was kind of up to, Jaylen Brown, got other guys involved with 8 assists. Derek White had 17 with 5 threes. Horford obviously had 19 points and 8 rebounds. And you got some solid contributions off the bench from Hauser, Keita, and Peyton Pritchard, who made 3 threes. And I thought that Keita gave you some good minutes, was a plus 11 in his 17 minutes. So I think better bench contributions in this game for the Celtics, and I think gave them the ability to kind of withstand the Denver rally in the second half. I think it was some great plays by Derek White. Those Celtics are, it's always so funny when you watch them in these close game situations, and Derek White's always the guy that comes up with the big plays, whether it's shot making, defensive plays, or just kind of, there's that play in the fourth quarter where, runs down a loose ball in the backcourt and then takes it into the basket, lays it in on kind of a floater, and it just, I said out loud that, man, they're really lucky to have a guy like that that can make those plays at key moments. I think, I don't know, he's a guy that it's so funny to think about how far he's come from being the guy that came to the Celtics with not a lot of confidence in his shot. I think whatever that season was that he came to the Celtics, shooting like 31% on three-pointers, and there was a lot of hesitation in his game. And then I think the Celtics encouraged him more and more to shoot, and it's almost like he's now become one of the best 3-point shooters in the NBA. You know, has a great quick release and just has that just clutch ability to knock down those shots when you really need it. You know, even especially if the Celtics, you know, have a bad offensive possession and he needs to bail them out, and he bails them out almost always. You know, it's like every 3-point shot he takes in the fourth quarter, you're convinced it's going to go in, and it's kind of a shock when it doesn't. But, you know, he played a really good game. Horford obviously was outstanding, turned back the clock with 19 points and 8 rebounds, had a couple steals, and the Celtics are incredibly lucky to have Al Horford as well. You know, just a guy that is just steady. You know, is always making the right plays, making the right plays at the right time. You know, doesn't need to be a guy that even needs to score the basketball, but there are times then when you can rely on him to make some shots. And I think it was great to see that the Celtics went inside to him a lot in this game, that they didn't have to, you know, rely on those 3-point shots. It is interesting that, you know, Michael Malone in Denver, I think, did a good job of limiting the Celtics' 3-point attempts. They only shot 34 threes in Sunday's game, which, you know, sounds like a lot, but the Celtics average close to 50 3-pointers a game. And so the fact that they were able to be so successful not taking as many. Now, obviously, they made 14, you know, 41% is a pretty decent percentage, but they did a good job of, you know, emphasizing taking the ball into the paint, you know, taking what the defense gave them. And I thought, you know, going to Horford on the inside a number of times is huge. Jaylen Brown made a really good concerted effort to take it into the paint more often, you know, hit those mid-range jumpers that he likes to hit. So I also thought defensively played a good solid game. You know, Horford's another guy that, you know, his defense still, in my opinion, doesn't get talked about enough, but I think he does such a great job at matching up with, you know, those bigs that the Celtics have had to go up against for years. You know, Jokic, obviously not necessarily in the East, but you know, the years going up against Adebayo, the years going up against Joel Embiid, you know, the years going up against Giannis. You know, I think Al Horford has become such a much more versatile player in his, you know, later age, which is so interesting that, you know, you think about him in Atlanta all those years ago, and I feel like he has grown and developed so much as a player throughout his career and still is, you know, incredibly effective at age 38. So, you know, it just was great to see, you know, Al get such a great opportunity to be great in that game on Sunday and then get his, you know, praise and appreciation from a lot of people that, you know, it just was good to see. So, good performance for the Celtics. I think a really good bounce back effort, and I think, you know, had another big lead in this game. Denver kind of made it close, but the Celtics did a really good job of kind of keeping that at bay with the big time plays from Horford and Derek White. So Celtics will continue their season long 7-game homestand. Tomorrow night they'll play Portland, and then Thursday they will host the 76ers. And then they will take on the Lakers, Luka, LeBron, and the Lakers on Saturday night. That's an 8:30 start on Saturday. Celtics will play Portland tomorrow, 7 o'clock start, and then Philadelphia is Thursday night at 7:30. And then the Celtics will wrap up the homestand next week with games against Utah and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So get ready for that one. That'll be an interesting game a week from tomorrow. So I think for the Celtics to, you know, what they want to try to focus on the rest of the season, I think locking up that number two seed, making sure that guys are rested and healthy. You know, obviously Holiday's missed some time with the finger injury. I think Celtics hope to get him back soon. Porzingis has been out with an illness, and I think it's definitely, tested the Celtics' depth, I think, in good ways, because I think gives you an opportunity to see, what else you have in the other guys, the other bench guys, obviously getting more opportunities than they typically would. I think Cornette has his moments, didn't play as well in the Cleveland game, played better against Denver. But I think, wanting this team to be at, full health, closest it can be to that before the end of the season, I think is most important. And, locking up that second seed, obviously, it's, not a guarantee. The Knicks are 2.5 games back. Check the standings later. But I think, making sure that they're balancing the locking up that second seed, but also being smart about giving guys rest here and there, and trying to make sure that they're fully rested and fully healthy. Jaylen Brown has been dealing with some leg stuff in the last couple of days or the last couple of games, so probably important to find him some rest. Always good when you can give somebody like Jason Tatum a night off. I know he likes to play, but I think the Celtics definitely want to be as careful as they can, and try to make sure that their team is whole heading into the playoffs, because I think this season probably not going to be like last year. Like, I think the Eastern Conference might be a little bit tougher, and so I think they were going to want to have Porzingis and Holiday healthy, for the postseason run, because I think a lot of us forget that Porzingis missed pretty much the entire playoffs last year. Played a couple games in the first round, and then was out until, kind of the tail end of the finals. So I think having him in there would be huge for the team's postseason run. And I feel like they're kind of going to need to have him if they're going to have any shot of repeating. So I think, yeah, that's probably going to do it for the Celtics. We're going to move on, talk some Bruins here as the trade deadline is this week. I think latest rumors on the Bruins, I think there was something I had seen about Brandon Carlo being linked to the Calgary Flames. Trent Frederick's name obviously has been brought up a few times. I think there was a rumor last week about the St. Louis Blues. Could they possibly be interested? Obviously, Frederick from the St. Louis area. So I think definitely two names to keep your eye on for the Bruins. Morgan Geekie, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bruins got some offers on him. I think that he's had a good season. Obviously had a career year last year. Obviously set career high in goals last week. So I think he's another guy that the Bruins certainly could take a look at moving. I think, Carlo, I kind of would be surprised. I know that there are people that think that, yeah, you could get a good amount in a trade for him. I don't know. I kind of like having him around for, leadership purposes, and that's also kind of why I'm not sure about trading Coyle either. Obviously, if you get a good enough deal and you can get a haul, so to speak, definitely do it. But I just think, like, this is a team that I think still is kind of in a bit of a state of a transition. And I feel like, making a trade like that definitely, could just be a major shakeup. And I don't know if this is a team that's ready for that. I think that obviously they're a resilient group, but I just think I'd be wary of a trade like that. How does that affect, the locker room and kind of the leadership culture? But, at the same time, like, this is not a team that's really put it together once this season, and it's kind of like you do have to start thinking about, best moves for the future of your hockey team. So Bruins, lost three of their last four since coming back from, or sorry, they've lost four of five since coming back from the Four Nations break. Obviously, the loss to Toronto last week after blowing a 3-goal lead. Couldn't find enough offense against the Islanders. Got a good win against Pittsburgh, a team that I think the Bruins are much, much better than, so I wasn't surprised that they were able to get that win. And then another low score, shutout loss to Minnesota on Sunday, where the offense just, can't find that finishing touch. And I feel like that's just been the story all season for this team, unfortunately. And I feel like, sure, there have been issues defensively. The team has really not been very good around either netminder. I don't think the netminders have exactly helped themselves at times, but I do think it is difficult when you're asking Jeremy Swayman to basically be perfect and basically be like, okay, you have to keep a game 2-1 or 1-0. And it's like, it comes to be taxing on a guy like that. And it's not been the most even season for him. I think he's had his issues for sure. And I feel like goes through those stretches where he plays really, really well, but then we'll go through stretches where he's letting in a lot of leaky goals and maybe doesn't look as good. But it just seems like for this team this year, it's just a combination of all the like worst things that can happen to a hockey team in terms of, too many defensive breakdowns, not enough secondary scoring, bad special teams, and goaltending that at times can't give you saves when you need it. And it's almost like it's a combination of all those things that just have come together this season in kind of like a perfect storm, in kind of a negative way, where it doesn't seem like anything has gone right for this particular team. And you look at the record in the last, 7 games, they've won one game. And I think it should tell you everything you need to know about where the season's going. And I know, we'll look at the standings later and see that the Bruins really aren't that far behind in terms of the wild card chase, but it's just, as I've said many times, and even when I talked to Evan Marinovsky a couple weeks ago, like there's nothing that tells you that this is a playoff team. Nothing that tells you that this team is worth investing in. And it sucks to say it because I'm always a pretty optimistic person in terms of the local teams and especially this team, because I've seen this team pull itself out of a lot of, hard spots throughout the years. And it's a big credit to, the leadership culture. But you look at this team and you look at where the state of the rest of the NHL is, and the Bruins are just behind, and it almost just seems like this is a team and an organization and like a front office that's almost comfortable with where the team is at. And that's kind of scary because it's like, I don't know, I feel like there's this stubbornness of the Bruins always wanting to try to be the big, tough, physical team. And it's almost like, you play the Panthers last year in the playoffs, and the thought is, oh, we got to get tougher. We got to get tougher. And it's like, it's something that, Ty Anderson talks about all the time on the Sports Hub Underground, where it's almost like the Bruins thought that they needed to get tougher to stand up to the Panthers. And it's like, well, wait a second. The Panthers also are very skilled, very talented offensive team, where it's like you have to be able to do both. You can't just be the big physical team that tries to intimidate everybody. Like you have to also try to, have some offensive talent and try to, play that skill game. And the Bruins just, for some reason, just don't want to do that. And it's not trying to say that, oh, they have a team full of skilled guys. They really don't. There are a lot of guys in this team that, I think just are not, it's the depth in the goal scoring is just not good enough. And I feel like this team is almost like, when you think about Mrkulov, you think about Lysell, the young guys that I think are doing really well in Providence and could have the ability to kind of give your team an offensive jump. And the Bruins are just okay with, playing Cole Koepke and Justin Brazo on the third line. And it's just like, Brazo has one goal in his last 18 games. Koepke, fine player. I think has given you some good games, I think, for what his role is, but it's like there are guys that are playing too high in the lineup that, I don't know. You look at other teams and there's a lot more skill in those areas. And it's not to criticize either of those guys because I think that they both work hard and, have their own things that they're good at. But, the Bruins just need more skill. And I think it's just very clear that this year's team just doesn't have that. And it just frustrates me that I feel like there's possibilities that the Bruins could look into Providence with Mrkulov and Lysell and be like, oh, we could try to see what these guys could do offensively, but they're just choosing not to do it. And it kind of drives me crazy. It probably drives a lot of people crazy that are listening to this and wondering why they're not playing those guys. It is good to see that Mrkulov is getting a chance and has played the last couple of games, is playing, up on the second line with Lindholm and Coyle, which is good to see, but it really feels like he's only playing there because they're down Brad Marchand, they're down, Trent Frederick, and they're missing those guys on the left side. And it's almost like, oh, it's, because he has to be there and not because the Bruins really want to see what he can do. So, good to see him getting those opportunities. I think it's good for him to be able to, play with those types of players. You would hope that Lysell works his way back up to the big club at some point. But I think it'll be interesting to see, what happens the rest of the week. Does somebody like Frederick get moved? Does somebody like Geeky get moved? Not anticipating that the Bruins are going to move a Carlo or a Coyle or a Marchand. I don't anticipate that they're going to do, anything crazy, but hard to know. I do also feel like Andrew Peak could be a guy that the Bruins move, although I think that they're, pretty limited with the defenseman that they have at the moment, so they may not be looking to move somebody like that. And I'd also say the same thing about Carlo. I think just because, you look at the injuries to Lindholm and to, or Hampus Lindholm, and to McAvoy, Carlo's having to play a lot of heavy minutes, just in general, and then on the penalty kill. And I just feel like if you're trading Carlo, you're going to make that penalty kill like a lot worse. And the penalty kill has struggled for the majority of this season. I think recently they've been better. But it's like you move Carlo, you're going to get a lot worse back there. And I think that as much as Zadorov, there's been a lot of critiques about him, and rightfully so. He's not had a good season, but I think, both he and Carlo have been getting a little bit better on the penalty kill, and I just feel like the team is already pretty short in terms of playable defensemen that they have. So I wouldn't think that they'd move Carlo, wouldn't think that they'd move Peak. I think if anybody gets moved, it's Trent Frederick or it's Morgan Geeky. And I think it's, one of those guys that the Bruins possibly, could they get a draft pick back? Could they get a player with term? Obviously, I think the St. Louis rumor had the Bruins possibly being interested in Jake Neighbors from the Blues, who I think has a couple years left on his contract. So I think, that could be a player that comes back to the Bruins if they're looking to send Frederick to St. Louis. But I do think that if I'm the Bruins, I'm probably trying to get a draft pick or two back, instead of hoping for a player that you could bring in to try to make a push for the postseason. I just feel like with this team in the spot that they are, with not a lot of draft capital, probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense to try to trade picks to kind of go all in. And it does seem like, Sweeney and Neely have both said that, maybe not directly, but I think have made it kind of known that it's going to be more of a cautious approach, which makes sense. I don't think it means that they're, not going to do anything, but I think, like, I just would hope that people aren't getting their hopes up for them to do anything major. I think a lot of people would kind of recognize the spot that they're in, that I think obviously, making the playoffs is probably unlikely. But I also think, and kind of thought about this after Saturday's game against Pittsburgh, that despite the Bruins being in the spot that they are, and a lot of us kind of being accepting for what they are as a team at this point, there's still going to be guys that are going to go out there and compete. The guys on that team are still going to go out there and play their hardest and, try to make a postseason run. Like, that's all those guys can do, really. I know a lot of us watching this team probably don't think that they're going to do much, and they may not, but I do think, those guys are going to play their hardest for the final 20 games, no matter what happens. And I just feel like it's probably important for people, us as fans, to not lose track of that. That, yeah, people may want them to, lose games and not be competitive because, oh, they might get into the draft lottery, but there are guys that are on that team that are still going to compete. There's still going to be guys that want to prove themselves and want to be able to, play for pride and finish out this season. So I just, that was something that I had thought about after Saturday's game against Pittsburgh. But, obviously, I think it's tough to have an expectation for this team, I think, just based on what you've seen offensively. But I will tell you, like, there are some positives. I don't want to be hammering the negatives constantly with this team, but I do think, somebody like Mason Lowrize continued to impress and kind of develop this season. It's not perfect. He'll still make mistakes defensively, but man, like, there was a play that he made. I think it was Sunday's game against the Wild in the third period. Just unbelievable stick handling all through the offensive zone, and it made you go like, whoa, this kid is really talented. So I think it's been nice to see, his development this season. I think in a season that's been kind of a lost year for this team, it's been really cool to see him, kind of flourish in more ice time and more opportunities, and then getting those opportunities because the Bruins are without Lindholm, without McAvoy, and he's a guy that's being asked to do a lot more. And I think that you've seen the good, you've seen the bad for sure, but I think, that's one of the things about giving a guy like that experience. So that's been really solid to see. So I just wanted to make sure that we made a note of that. So, deadline week will be interesting. But I think, yeah, the Bruins are still going to compete, still going to try to make a push. I think just for me, I'm kind of pretty at peace with what they are at this point. So I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, I really want them to make a postseason push. They may still make the playoffs. Who knows? There's still 20 games left. The Bruins could make some kind of run, although I think just with the injuries piling up now that, Marchand's been out for a couple games, Frederick's been out, and, don't know if he's staying here past the deadline. But I do think at a certain point, like, the injuries that they're suffering may be a little too much to overcome, but still things to play for the rest of the season, for sure. So the Bruins will have a home game here against Nashville tonight at the Garden. And then they will travel down south for a matchup with the Hurricanes Thursday night, 7 o'clock. And then Saturday afternoon, they are in Tampa against the Lightning at 3 o'clock. It's an ABC game against Tampa Bay. So that's the Bruins' next three games. So we're going to move on, talk a little Revolution. Revs had their home opener on Saturday night, losing to the Columbus Crew 1-0. Goal in the second half for the Crew beat the Revolution. Revs still looking for their first goal of the season as they'll enter into their next game this Saturday night at Gillette against the Philadelphia Union. So I think another kind of rocky offensive game for the Revs. I think the good thing is defensively they look to be pretty solid. Obviously they kind of get caught up field for the only goal of the game, but I did think that overall their structure was pretty good. And I think you consider Columbus last year, the Revolution. I think there was the two games that they played against Columbus where they lost by 4 goals, and I think did a little bit better this time around defensively, but still very clearly they're working through a lot of things offensively with a lot of new guys. There were at least two or three, instances on Saturday night where a certain player, makes a play, makes a pass, and a certain player kind of just stopped running. So kind of tells me that there's a lot of, communication and things to work through for the Revolution. So, as John Veneziano and I kind of talking about on Guest Friday a couple of weeks ago, there probably are going to be some growing pains for this team, especially offensively in terms of all the different guys that they've brought in. But I think the early returns on, the defense are good. One goal allowed in the first two games is pretty good. Revs have had or had their fair share of issues defensively last season, but I do think the, new center backs in Fofana and Ceballos have done a pretty good job in the first two games. But I think it's for the Revolution, it's just kind of figuring out, what works offensively. Revs had the exact same starting lineup in last week's game. So I'd be curious if they make any kind of switches to start the game Saturday against Philadelphia. Will Sands comes in for Brandon Baez as a substitute. Urruti came in as a substitute. Luis Diaz also came in as a substitute for the second straight game. So, I think it'd be interesting to see, if the Revs kind of experiment with somebody else in the lineup. I think, two games that they've played, no goals. You may want to think about introducing somebody like Noel Buck into the lineup just to see if, injecting somebody else kind of gets them going. So we'll see how the Revs do. They will host Philadelphia Saturday at 7:30, and then the rest of March traveling to NYCFC and then hosting the Red Bulls. So those are the three games in March on the Revolution schedule. So I think we're going to be done with the Revs. Move on to the Patriots. Officially, T. Higgins is going to be tagged by the Bengals, so Patriots will not have the ability to sign him. I think that was kind of somewhat significant. Scouting Combine was over the weekend. Not really as much of an event as it used to be. I think a lot of the top prospects, not working out, but I think as far as other, news, there's not, direct Patriots news, but free agency is coming up, and I do think that definitely next week we'll take a look at potential additions for this team, as they have a lot of cap space. So I would definitely anticipate that they make a lot of moves in terms of free agency. I think how do they attack the offensive line, defensive line? What's the trade market going to look like? I do think that sure they're going to make some signings in free agency, but I do think in the trade market there could be some guys that they potentially take a big swing at. Do guys get surprise released? You saw Darius Slay get released yesterday by the Eagles. Not saying that the Patriots should go out and sign him, although it may not be a bad idea, but you never know who might get released for salary cap purposes. So I think definitely along the interior in the offensive and defensive line there are going to be needs. Definitely in the secondary at cornerback, do the Patriots feel like they want to address that spot in free agency, get somebody opposite Christian Gonzalez. You know, what does the wide receiver market look like? Do they want to take a chance at signing somebody like Chris Godwin, who I believe is going to be a free agent? Do they kind of think about the draft? A lot of possibilities for sure for this team, but I think I would expect that they are, you know, aggressive, I think, in terms of addressing needs. I do think that I expect offensive line that they take a look at, you know, distinct possibility that they look to move Michael Owenu back on the interior of the offensive line to guard, and maybe the Patriots, you know, think about signing a couple tackles or maybe drafting somebody. I really wouldn't be surprised if they choose to address offensive line in the draft and in free agency at the same time. So that will be kind of interesting to see. But yeah, I think we'll have a more closer look in terms of, you know, free agents, particular guys next week, and then hoping to do a guest Friday next week to do a Patriots, you know, free agency preview. So definitely will be a lot more for you folks then. So I think that's going to do it for the Patriots. Going to move on to talking some NBA here. It was reported that Kyrie Irving tore his ACL last night in the Mavericks game. Nah. Actually, I didn't check to see if they had won or not. But he actually did stay in the game to take free throws. Mavericks lost to the Kings last night, 122 to 98. So Kyrie Irving, unfortunately, will miss the rest of the season with that injury. Jalen Suggs for the Magic is also having knee surgery, and he is done for the season. The Thunder won their 50th game last night as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 50 points in their 50th win of the season. We'll take a look. Some games on the schedule tonight. 7 o'clock starts. Houston and Indiana. Toronto and Orlando. 7:30, Milwaukee and Atlanta. Golden State and New York on TNT. Cleveland and Chicago at 8. Philadelphia and Minnesota at 8. Brooklyn and San Antonio at 8:30. And then the Clippers and Phoenix at 10 o'clock on TNT, and then the Pelicans and the Lakers at 10:30. Taking a look at the standings here, Cavaliers have a 7.5 game lead over the Celtics for first place in the East. Celtics currently in second with a 2.5 game lead over the Knicks. The Bucks are in fourth place, followed by the Pacers and the Pistons we mentioned earlier. In the play-in spots, we have the Heat, the Magic, the Hawks, and the Bulls, with the Nets 2.5 games back of that final play-in spot. 76ers are also to be without Joel Embiid the rest of the season, as he'll have another surgery on his left knee. Sixers are 2.5 back of the final play-in spot as well. In the Western Conference, Oklahoma City has opened up a double-digit lead in games in the West, so they have an 11-game lead over the Lakers in second. Nuggets are in third, followed by the Grizzlies, the Rockets, and the Warriors. And then in the play-in spots, you have the Clippers, Kings, Timberwolves, and Suns, or excuse me, Mavericks, with the Suns 3.5 games back of that final wild card spot, or play-in spot. I think that's going to, yeah, we're gonna move on. Just my NHL notes. The Panthers and the Blackhawks made a trade earlier. I think it was over the weekend. Blackhawks sending Seth Jones to the Panthers. Spencer Knight going back to Chicago in that trade. Former goaltender for the Panthers got a win in his first game last night. The Panthers are reporting that Matthew Tkachuk will be out for the regular season with a groin injury, so being put on long-term injured reserve after the injury got worse in the Four Nations tournament. The Capitals are signing Charlie Lindgren to a new contract, 3 years for $9 million. So take a look at some scores, or take a look at some games tonight. Bruins and Predators at 7, San Jose and Buffalo, Carolina and Detroit, Columbus and Tampa Bay, Calgary and Philadelphia all at 7, Winnipeg and the Islanders at 7:30, New Jersey and Dallas at 8 o'clock on ESPN Plus and Hulu, Pittsburgh and Colorado at 9, Edmonton and Anaheim also at 9, and then Minnesota against Seattle at 10. So we'll take a look at the standings here in the Eastern Conference in the Atlantic. Toronto is now tied atop the Atlantic with 79 points with Florida. Tampa Bay is in third with 74 points. In the Metropolitan, the Capitals continue to lead the Metro and the East with 86 points. Carolina in second with 74, and then the Devils in third with 72. Speaking of the Capitals, Alex Ovechkin, 11 goals away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal-scoring record. So keep your eyes on that because that may happen before the end of the regular season. And then in the wild card spots, you have Columbus with 68 points, Detroit with 66. Both teams just played the latest Stadium Series game outside over the weekend at Ohio Stadium in Columbus. Blue Jackets winning 5-3 in that game. So Blue Jackets with the first, or in the first wild card spot, and then Detroit in the second. 68 points for Columbus, 66 for Detroit. The Rangers even in points with Detroit and Ottawa and Montreal 1 point back, and the Bruins are 2 points back. So, even despite us talking about the Bruins and kind of how lousy they've been lately, they're still, only 2 points out of a wild card spot. So we'll see what the last 20 games have in store for the Bruins. So in the Western Conference, Winnipeg leads the Central and the entire NHL with 88 points, followed by Dallas with 80, Minnesota with 74, and then in the Pacific, Vegas with 78 points, Edmonton with 74, the Kings with 70, and then in the wild card spots, Colorado first with 72 points, and then Calgary second with 65 points, Vancouver even in points with them, St. Louis a point back, and Utah 2 points back. So things are getting pretty tight in both conferences. So we'll take a look. Some MLB notes here. Jose Quintana being signed by the Brewers this morning, so they get some rotation depth there, and you got some spring training games this afternoon. Also, Red Sox playing the Pirates. So take a look, some NFL notes before we get to our top five. The Vikings reportedly will not franchise tag Sam Darnold, so he's expected to become a free agent. Bengals franchise tagging T. Higgins for the second year in a row. And the Eagles obviously choosing to cut Darius Slay yesterday, saving about $4 million in cap space. Packers re-signing Isaiah McDuffie to a 2-year deal. Matthew Stafford also re-upped, or I think signed a new contract with the Rams, so he's staying there. And yeah, we are within 2 months of the NFL draft. Obviously, a lot closer to free agency, of course, with that starting in about 2 weeks, and then the draft is late April. But definitely keep you updated on Patriots free agency news as free agency gets closer. So I think that's going to do it for the sports this week. We got a great top five for you this week, obviously, with the Oscars taking place on Sunday night. I felt that it was perfect timing to do a top five of my favorite movies of all time. Now, granted, like, I'm not saying these are, the five best movies, Also, I actually don't know if I would call it my favorite, or actually, no, let's call it that. Let's call it my top five favorite movies. So that's what we're doing today. So I think, we'll start with number five. We'll go down to number one. So number five, I'm thinking that as big of a Star Wars fan as I am, I had to include a Star Wars film in this top five. So for me, it's difficult because there are a couple of Star Wars films that I'm kind of partial to. I know that this might sound insane, but when I was a kid growing up, always liked the first episode one. And then kind of as I got older, I watched episode six quite a few times. Really liked that one. I know maybe, those movies are not the best movies, but I definitely enjoyed both of those. But I think if I'm going to pick my favorite Star Wars movie, I think it's got to be Empire Strikes Back. I think just a great story, great characters. They build off the original, and obviously it's, in my opinion, I think it's the most iconic Star Wars movie. I know some people might say A New Hope, but I think Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars movie. I think also just would probably call it my favorite if I, had to pick one. So I would say that's a good number five. Number four, I have Ocean's 11, which is a great heist movie from, I think it's like early 2000s with Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Julia Roberts, Matt Damon. It's a ridiculous list of actors and actresses that are in this movie, but not normally a heist movie person, but man, there's something about this movie that is, I always will watch it when it's on. If it's on TV and I'm flipping through the stations, I will always watch it. I'll always put it on. A lot of great, quotable lines and things that I remember. So that's a good number four for me. Number three, Jurassic Park. It's got to be the original. I think that's still the best movie of the franchise. It's kind of sad to see where the franchise is at this current moment, but I would say that's definitely always been a favorite, always been a big dinosaur fan, so I feel like that's a great one to put. I think it's the best Jurassic Park movie. I don't really think it's particularly close, to be quite honest, but I did so enjoy seeing Jurassic World because there was a lot of nostalgia in that, but I think I got to choose the original one from 1993 as my number three. Just a great movie, just a great movie, and I think one of the better movies ever made, frankly. I think the best dinosaur movie you'll ever see. So that's a good number three. Number two, I have The Other Guys, which is my favorite comedy film of all time. I actually just recently watched it with a couple friends, but it's just my opinion, I think pound for pound, the funniest movie that I've ever seen. Just so many hilarious scenes, hilarious lines. Mark Wahlberg is fantastic. Will Ferrell is fantastic. I also think Michael Keaton is might be the funniest character in that movie, so or the funniest actor in that movie. So that's definitely my favorite comedy film. Always gets a laugh. I'm always quoting it too. But yeah, I would say that's definitely a good number two. And then number one, it's got to be The Dark Knight. I'm a huge Batman fan, huge Batman nerd, love all kinds of Batman stuff. But I think this is, it's easily my favorite, Batman media, piece of media. It's just such a great movie. It's just, there's so much about it that is just perfect. Like, Heath Ledger is amazing as the Joker. The way the movie sounds is, there's really nothing like it. Nothing compares to the sounds, the music in that movie, or the score, I should say. But yeah, I think just a fantastic story. Just everything you could ask for in a movie, in my opinion. And I think Head and Shoulders, for me, Head and Shoulders above any other superhero movie that I've ever seen. Just there's not a lot that you can pick out of that movie, but just a outstanding movie, my favorite movie. I'll watch it. I don't know how many times I've watched it in my lifetime, probably close to 50. I'll watch it 50 more times, and it's just such a great film. And yes, very quotable. I still quote it all the time to this day. But yeah, I think that's a good number one. So some honorable mentions here. Had to put in some movies from some great film series. The Fellowship of the Ring, Lord of the Rings. I think, still my favorite one of the series, obviously. The other two ones, the main series, are fantastic, but I think Fellowship of the Ring, probably my favorite one. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, really like that one. Obviously, Raiders of the Lost Ark is a great movie as well, but Last Crusade, for some reason, that's always been my favorite one of those movies. 21 Jump Street, very funny comedy. A lot of people will know that one, but I think, again, kind of like the other guys, just super quotable. So many hilarious scenes, so I gotta have that one in there. The Batman is also in there, the movie with Robert Pattinson a couple years ago. Really a big fan of that one. Oppenheimer as well. Really enjoyed that one when I saw that in theaters. Toy Story is also on there as well. Loved Toy Story growing up, and still a great film that holds up. So I think, just to give you a taste of some of my favorite movies, there's definitely a lot more than I can, go through. Maybe we do a later top five of some genres, but those are just some great movies. Not too embarrassed to say, didn't really know too many of the films at this year's Oscars, but those are definitely some great movies that I enjoy. Would highly recommend all those movies to anybody listening. So if you're ever interested in those films, definitely do not pass them up. So I think that'll do it for me this week. Great to be back with you folks. A lot of stuff that we got through. Looking forward to later this week. Be doing that Twitter Spaces live. Probably will do it from the podcast Twitter account. So make sure you're following that on Twitter at NotBoston. I'll also be recording the audio and posting it later on Friday, so you can listen to that if you're not on Twitter, or if you're not on, Twitter at whatever time I do the live Twitter Spaces. But looking forward to doing that, and yeah, we will talk to you then.